Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back again 2 weeks from the Premiership return. In fact, as we record today, 12 days from the return of the Premiership. Two more rounds of Super Rugby, Aotearoa to get through, and more rugby to talk about there. Signings, rumours. Rugby's never far away from a political issue at the minute, and the governance of the game is up in the air as well. We've got it all to talk about. Hi, JB.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm sweaty right now. I've been out for a run. I've had a shower. It looks like I've... But I'm just... I can't cool down. I'm sweating buckets. So I apologise.
Working out.
And there's Phil. Phil in a vest. What vest is that you got on?
Hello, Tim. I'm in my Sam Burgess...
Oh, lovely.
2015 Bath vest.
Does Sam Burgess ever wear that vest?
Maybe. It might actually be 1 year post Sam Burgess's leaving Bath.
That's what we call stolen valor. Stolen valor.
I'll tell you what, just one quick one. I just want to mention this. Wednesday night, there is a quiz between podcasts. And it was going to be me and JB together representing us, but JB, you've been stood down.
Do we not want to win this or something?
Well, I know. Yeah. Anyway, basically, I'm going up against Hugo Monnier, Alex Lowe of The Times, and David Flatman. In a quiz hosted by Craig Doyle, which will be on BT Sports, Twitter, Facebook, and all the rest of it channels.
What? Hang on, wait a second. And they could only get one member from each podcast to show up for this?
Well, people are on holiday and stuff, JB.
Oh, is what? What? Were they not paying them enough? What? what deal?
No money, JB. This is all about pride and the excitement of the game.
There is, I tell you what, there might be pride from our side. No pride from those guys whatsoever.
It may well be a logistical reason why they've picked one rather than two.
I guess so. I mean, I guess the logistics for us is we love the game. The logistics for them is the sponsors weren't handing out any cash. Unbelievable.
Or it would have been too many windows on the screen for people to look at, and it's a bit easy with four contestants.
Whatever. Not having it.
good luck, Tim. You're going to have to do us proud. You can't let the side down.
Sorry. I just say sorry in advance because...
Marshall, I have 100% faith in you.
Well, I mean, Alex Lowe, his job is to read and write about it all the time. I've got very selective areas that I'm very good on, and if I don't hit any of them, I'm screwed. So anyway...
Like the quad round? When the players...
If there's an identify players from their quads, I'll be sweet.
Or Ben Ryan's coaching career.
Yeah, Ben Ryan's coaching career, yeah.
No, in fairness, that's a pretty good panel, that. It'll be fairly tasty.
So it's 7 p.m. Wednesday night.
Yeah, hey, that'd be good.
BT Sport hosted by Doyler. So yeah, it should be fun. I just thought I'd give a mention to that. But have you watched much rugby this weekend?
Yes-ish.
I've had a sport-filled weekend. I've been watching the Australian Super Rugby AU, Super Rugby Aotearoa. Why? I quite enjoyed the Super Rugby AU that I watched. We'll go into it later and I'll explain why, but I quite enjoyed it. I watched a good chunk of the FA Cup final, and I even watched some live snooker, which I really enjoy. I always quite like watching snooker. It's like therapeutic.
People forget how amazingly big snooker was. Like, amazingly big. I can't remember where I was listening to this. Oh, someone died recently, didn't they? What was his name? Snooker player died this year.
Dennis, honestly.
No, it was someone who'd never...
Willie Thorne.
Yeah, I think he was famous for never winning the World Championships. But people forget how big it was. And there's a story about some American Hollywood actor coming over to the UK and hanging out with Willie Thorne, and nobody recognising the actor, but everyone recognising Willie Thorne. It was a legitimately bought.
Yeah, that one of the bank holiday weekends in, it was either in May or the summer, I don't know, but one of the bank holiday weekends, it was just millions of people watched it. And suddenly, it's a bit like Wimbledon. I don't care for tennis for 50 weeks of the year, but I get well into it for 2 weeks. Same with golf. The US, sorry, not the US Open, the Ryder Cup, mad into it. And I never watch it for 4 years or 2.5 years or however long it is. And it's the same with snooker. When it's
imagine being a tennis fan, as in watching all of the small events in between the Grand Slams. There must be people that do this, travel to the events and whatnot.
But people will say that about rugby as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a huge number of people who just watch Six Nations and World Cup, and they might say, God, imagine watching Sale Bath on a Friday night. How dull would that be?
I mean, obviously, they don't know what they're talking about. But
if it's the 3-3 draw or whatever it was from the other season.
We had a 3-3 and a 6-3.
Remarkable. See, I've watched plenty of sport and plenty of rugby as well this weekend.
It's been good. I can't wait for the Premiership to be back. I really can't.
All right, it's going to be great.
But on the subject of, well, let's start with the New Zealand Aotearoa, because that seems to be a competition which has captured our imagination. And I'm just loving the look of those Canterbury. Well, I think we should call them from now on, rather than Canterbury Crusaders, we should call them the Canterbury Double Dongs for their logo. Now that's an offensive logo.
It's a thing logo. I mean, are we not being offensive by saying it's offensive? Who knows? They can, as far as I'm concerned, they can put whatever they want on their shirt because they're so bloody good.
They're so good.
Yeah, they can get away with it, can't they?
Yeah, I'm surprised you're not a little bit more upset because, of course, your Timlanders got absolutely battered.
Yeah, we did. I watched that this morning.
By your beloved Blues, JB.
But it's always made up for by the stash that the coaches wear, the lumberjack shirts.
Well, it's sort of bringing to fruition what you were suggesting last week, Tim, which the final weekend is going to be Crusaders Blues, and providing
Double Dongs Blues.
Yeah, Double Dongs Blues. And providing they can hold it together next week, the Blues, which is not by any stretch nailed on, that final week is going to be bloody brilliant.
Well, not quite, because the Blues don't play next week. The Blues have got a bye week next week.
And hang on a minute. Yeah, go on.
Blues have got a bye week next week, and if the Crusaders get a bonus point win, it's over.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It's already done and dusted. In fact, they just need a win of any sort. It's not even a bonus point win.
Which will make it a little bit of a damp squib.
The way I look at it is Crusaders have lost one game. Blues have lost two games. Blues can beat the Crusaders with a bonus point and win, unless I've got all my maths.
You are right, but you're missing the fact that Crusaders have got two additional bonus points compared to the Blues. So they are 2 points ahead. So Crusaders just need a 4-point victory, and then no matter what the Blues do in their game,
it's not going to be Hurricanes, is it? It's going to be Highlanders, I guess. No, or Chiefs.
So Crusaders play Highlanders, Hurricanes play Chiefs next week. So Crusaders at home to Tim's Landers. And JB, both you and I, for our beloved Canes and Blues respectively, we need Tim's Landers to do a job in Canterbury.
The boys will do a job.
I'm not so sure.
Smithy will sort them out.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the most bizarre and brilliant kind of freakish ways that a try was disallowed and a try was held up. Aaron Smith just had his foot under the... just stuck his foot out and put it under the ball as Ash Dixon, the hooker, was planting it down. And absolutely awesome. He's brilliant.
So let's just talk. I know I've spoke about this at length, but it's starting to bother me now even more. What do you think of Damien McKenzie's game this week?
So he kicked well, and I felt the Chiefs made the right decisions, which they didn't at times last week, going for sticks. I think that's really important. he's not getting a huge amount of opportunity to run with the ball in hand.
Nope.
Not so. I don't feel like you're seeing the best of his game. But against the Crusaders, who have got the best defense in the competition, they're so well organized and so well set up. The Canes last week on beating the Crusaders, they didn't get much opportunity to run with the ball. They beat them because of Crusaders' ill discipline and Jordy Barrett's kicking sticks.
Yeah, it's like being a fullback against Saracens, isn't it? They're going to kick really intelligently, and the chase is going to be so organized and the defensive arrangement that even if you are Liam Williams against Saracens, you're going to struggle to find space.
Yeah, so that's not the bit which bothers me. I have no problem with Damien McKenzie's ball in the hand running skills, surprisingly enough. But there was a tiny snippet of the game, which I thought, that's interesting, which is he kicks the ball and he very kind of, he is running, he is knackered, but it's a very casual chase. He then tries to make the tackle on someone and just completely gets skittled. And maybe 2 minutes later, the Crusaders score that try in the corner through the number eight. Is it, what's his name?
Sanders.
Tom Sanders. That was a hell of a try.
There's not much he can do about that, to be fair. You know, Tom Sanders is a big boy running at full pace. But it reminded me of watching Jordy Barrett a few weeks ago, which is they kick the ball, a sort of half-arse chase, and then they try and defend high in the line. And this seems to be the problem for all three of, I think, who are the potential all-black fullbacks, which are Jordy, Bowden, and then Damien McKenzie. They're all really good with ball in hand. They're all really good playmakers. I think Jordy Barrett is the most complete fullback, but they're absolute liabilities when they enter the line. And I don't mean enter the line with ball in hand, enter the line defensively after a kick, when they're trying to chase everyone on side. So there's something to be said there. This, to me, opens up the door for someone like Will Jordan. If he can be a better fullback than those guys, that 15 shirt, I think, I think it's open. Unless the decision's already been made, they want the best players rather than the best fullback to take the field for the All Blacks.
Well, it will be an interesting decision because Bowden, Barrett, back at 10 for the last 2 weeks and has had two good games at 10. Certainly, I think he's played his best games for the Blues playing at 10.
Yeah.
In this game, there was two brilliant moments. One with the cross kick for Caleb Clark and one in the second half where he dummies the cross kick and then throws like a three-man miss pass out to the wing, which both of them were just sublime, absolutely brilliant. But
yeah.
So I think it's a really interesting point, really interesting talking point, because so when you've got Damien McKenzie or Jordy Barrett or Bowden Barrett at 15, you've got a second playmaker. Mm. Now, in the past, when you've had Ben Smith at fullback, they've tried to use Ben Smith as a second playmaker, so bringing him into the line, because often when you have Sonny Bill or Lau Mappi, for example, at inside centre, you don't have a second playmaker in the at 12. And interestingly, watching the Chiefs Crusaders game, George Bridge, who is likely to be one of the starters on the wing for the All Blacks, he was actually often coming in to be that second playmaker, to either play first pivot or second pivot. So yeah, I wonder if that is part of the strategy from the top down to say, well, maybe we don't have DMAC or one of the Barrett boys at fullback, but we can get the second playmaker off the wing if George Bridge is playing.
That makes more sense to me. And I don't think I've ever seen it in professional rugby. Or very seldom. I'm trying to think of a guy who does that. I can't think of anyone, really. But
maybe when Austin Healey was a jack of all trades.
Yeah, you can hide someone on the wing. I mean, the other thing is, well, wing is no joke. International wing is, you know, you've got to be a good winger. You've got to be a good winger. You've got to know your positions. You know, it's actually far more technical than anyone gives it credit for. The problem, there's a dual problem with the 10s playing 15 in New Zealand. It's not really a problem, I guess. I mean, having too much 10 talent has never really been an issue. You feel sorry for a team 4. But first of all, I don't think it's helping develop 10s in New Zealand. So if you think about DMAC, and Cruden, that'd be a good one. I think that having one of those guys on the bench and then splitting the game time and making them compete against each other until one is a clear, one is clearly better than the other. Steel sharpens steel. That to me makes more sense. Ottier Black in the Blues, as far as I know, and you know, I'm no expert on New Zealand rugby, but as far as I know, Ottier Black is not in the running for the All Blacks job.
Correct.
So why on earth, I mean, why keep him there? Why not bring
they
him
have,
back?
They haven't.
No, because he's injured. He got injured, didn't he? And then Bowden Barrett had a good game. Bowden Barrett stayed in. But that's how it should be, really, shouldn't it? It should be two guys competing for a job, and then you only get the job once you've won it. I think Ottier Black competing against Bowden Barrett would be far more beneficial for both of those guys rather than sort of fudging Bowden Barrett at 15 and putting... Uh-oh. Hello?
Hello?
Still there.
Yeah, putting Ottier at 10. Hang on, I've lost my train of thought.
Yeah, putting him at 10. What I would maybe say, devil's advocate on that one, is New Zealand are a nation which usually... two steps ahead in any game of 4D chess, and they're probably making decisions now with World Cup 2023 in mind.
Well, I think what they have to be aware of is, think back to the last World Cup, England's kicking game tore them to pieces.
Well, it was a combination, wasn't it? It was England's kicking, but then England's power through the middle, the running power game led by Manu and the Vunipolas and Itoje and others.
Jordan Barrett. Sorry, go on.
If you've got a point to sort of round that fullback thing off, I was going to take it in a different direction, but go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jordy Barrett to me is their best option at fullback because he is the only actual fullback, but he does suffer from the same frailties that the other two do. But he does other fullback things better. I can't see any benefit to continuing with Bowden Barrett or DMAC at 15 because you're basically relying on them doing amazing things to win a game rather than being a fullback. And I can't see anyone of those three and Will Jordan who's going to come even close to what Ben Smith offered back in the day. I think they're going to have to rethink a little bit about how they get the second playmaker in, and also they need a little bit more solidity at fullback. That said, we are talking about the best players in the world here. I'm sure they can make it. But just, you know,
yeah, it's like as amazing as some of those New Zealand wingers have been over the years, and they're brilliant specimens in their own right, guys like Julian Surveyor. Sometimes, relatively speaking, it's a piece of piss being a New Zealand winger. All you've got to be is quick and be able to catch a ball, and you've got 10 tries a season for the All Blacks.
probably not even that quick, just catch a ball and fall over the line.
I wonder what they're going to do with Iwani, because he's playing 13. I'm still not convinced that he's a 13. He's an incredible winger. I think he's going to be back in the All Black squad. I mean, I don't know what the All Black squad
is. Of course he'll be in the squad. But this is the thing. This is why I'm saying it's all 2023. Now's the time to try things out. And they may well come to the conclusion when they debrief at the end of this season. And it's the cool thing about their structure, where Steve Hansen can sit around with Robinson and Aaron Major and all the rest of it and say, yeah, this worked, this didn't work. How about we focus on this? Because it's a kind of mutually beneficial scenario. So...
Well, Steve Hansen's not the coach anymore, is he?
Well, of course, but yeah, you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying, yeah.
Fozzie.
Just on
Rico Ioane, because I think there's no doubt he will be in the squad. I think he will probably be on the pitch. I think there's a good chance with Laumapi injured. Goodhue has been playing 12, and so you're likely to see Goodhue and Ioane as your starting 12-13 combination.
And then I do like them, obviously. I think they're both phenomenal players. In my mind, I can't see how that combination works.
I think that combination could work very handily. I actually really like that combination.
But they're just... Do you not think they're too similar? They're basically...
Goodhue and Ioane.
As in, they're both pace players. They're both lethal with ball in hand. Neither of them is particularly...
Goodhue's got a bit of the Conrad Smith about him for me. Just that kind of... all-rounder.
And a bit of the crotty about it. Goodhue's not exceptional in any category, but he's way above average at every single thing.
He is pretty rapid.
He's not as rapid as Rico Ioane, I would suggest. I could be wrong about that.
I see them both as speedsters.
Interesting. I'm different with Goodhue.
Where is Ryan Crotty now?
Japan.
Tell you what, they're all good. I anyone showing up to Japan in holiday mode is going to get a rude awakening. When
There is
unless they all have a little gentleman's agreement, just you know.
Hey, bro, why are 70, we all
75,
here?
What are we doing today? 75%, 60%? What are we at today?
No one's watching. Pick up our check and go home, boys.
Get on the strong zero.
We've all seen someone in our team do that at some point down the years. Do that thing where they manage to, they try to look like they're trying, maybe to reach a covering tackle, but just not can't quite make it.
What a shit!
It's an art.
Feigning the stumble.
Just before we depart New Zealand, just one thing, and you were talking about the sort of match in England's power and pace in the World Cup that they didn't manage to. That's been one feature of the last couple of weeks, particularly the number of driving mauls, the number of really big, powerful scrums, and Tuonga Fassi for Auckland Blues is one of the standout players. Absolutely monstering everybody in the scrums, and there's a lot of power play going on. Which
he put in a huge hit. I think it was on Cruden last week as well, where he absolutely nailed him, just timed it perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's just think about this a second. One of the things which does concern me about the New Zealand pool of players, who are the guys that are going to stand up to the All Blacks? Sorry, stand up to the Springboks and beat them? The physicality.
Well, it depends what part of the pitch. So, your second rows, Whitelock and Retallick and Scotty Barrett. They've all been fairly handy, and Tui Pulotu is just this is the best I've ever seen him play.
Yeah, and Lau Mappi in midfield, 100% will.
No, just in the pack though, because that's what I worry about. I worry about you mentioned some good second rows there, but the South African second rows they might be the best set of second rows that we've ever seen as a group, ever in the history of the sport. So, this is all good. But it's monstrous.
The back row's where the evolution's going to happen in the New Zealand team. That's going to be the big evolution between World Cups is the back row.
And who are you looking at there then? Who's made you think, he's a game changer?
Well, one that's made me think he could be a class international player by the next World Cup is Dalton Papali'i. He's got some proper raw attributes. And he's going to be young.
Lots of hard work too.
I think there's quite a few back rows, particular sixes. So Lachlan Boshier in a bad team has been exceptional.
Yeah.
Duplessis Kirithi has been superb. Shannon Frizzell again, who's had a little chance in the past for the All Blacks. All of those boys are looking absolute class.
So you've effectively got two spots to fill in the back row, haven't you? Because Sam Kane's going to play.
Sam Kane is going to play, and perhaps not deservedly based on form.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm loving Ioane at the moment. Akira, I think he's doing really well, but he looks like a bench option. Shannon Frizzell's ace.
So Totu's 21. Don't forget.
So Totu, he might even play for Fiji. I don't know. Who knows?
Or England.
I think Ardy is undeniable. Actually.
Yeah, Ardy.
They've got options. Yeah.
So they've got a fair few options there.
And
their scrum's normally quite handy.
The problem is, Ardy, Frizzell and Sam Kane are all incredible. But they're all quite small. When I say small, I mean small in the land of South African back rooms.
Yeah.
Peter Steptoe.
Peter Steptoe. But Peter Steptoe is as an all-round player, he's not like a Billy or a Pickermalls, is he?
Yeah, but they've also got like Vermaelen, and
has Vermaelen not retired from international now?
Yeah. But I'm giving you examples of like big physical players who if they wanted to, right, they could literally go and pick the Sale Sharks back row, who are all bigger South Africans than what they have in New Zealand. I mean, they grow these guys just on trees.
They've got options, and maybe, like I say, in terms of the evolution of their game, maybe we'll see something to 2023. Maybe they're plotting and planning, but brilliant competition. And go on, Phil.
Just one other thing. I think So in terms of size and physicality, there may be some concerns, but do you know how many rugby championships South Africa have won in the last 10 years?
Oh, one.
One. Yes. So, I'm New Zealand have won 7 or 8 of the last 10 years. So I'm not too certain they're going to be that concerned. Obviously, they'll be concerned going against the world champions, but they're not going to be terrified of it.
Yeah. I mean, did they beat them in the World Cup? Yes, they did, didn't they?
New Zealand beat South Africa in their opening game, didn't they?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a cracking game.
Well, yeah, rugby championship would be good. It'd be good to get some international rugby back if it goes ahead as potentially planned.
Well, speaking of international rugby, it appears that we're going to get what was muted last week. I don't know if it's still been officially confirmed. No, has it been officially confirmed now, the Japan-Fiji 8-team tournament?
I don't believe so. I don't even believe... So I was looking through my World Rugby emails, the official announcements just before. I don't even believe the extended international window that they've proposed has been formally signed off. Right. I certainly don't have a press release confirming that. And that is an extended window from, I think it's the 24th of October through to the first week in December, which would allow 2 weeks at the end of October, start of November, to conclude this year's Six Nations, because Italy and Ireland need to play, and then you need to have the final round of games.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a 1 week break followed by the 8-team proposed tournament, which would be the Six Nations plus then Fiji and either Japan or Georgia, I think was the potential. But yeah, again, I don't think any of that's actually formally concluded yet.
Yeah, and they've done 2 groups, haven't they?
2 lopsided groups from looking at it. France, Scotland, Italy, Japan, and then England, Ireland, Wales, and Fiji.
Oh, right. Wow.
So it does feel about as lopsided as you could get it.
Yeah, pretty. And what do? Do they play a final after all? I don't like it. I don't like it.
They play 3 games and then a final.
Yeah. And it's not ideal, but I really don't care. I want to see rugby back, and I want to see money into the game back.
Can I just ask, what is the obsession with tournaments? I mean, there is a time for a tournament. It's once every 4 years. Obviously, there's the Six Nations. What is wrong with test matches? Because with a test match, you're starting with a clean sheet, a blank slate, some other cliche, which I can't think of. But you do that every game. And a test match is really, really important. You hit the reset button, you go again, right?
It's so that England can play Ireland and Wales and it doesn't feel as stale as an England v Ireland game that isn't in the Six Nations should feel.
Yeah, because they have done this, haven't they?
Yeah.
Having home nations tests. Nobody cares.
No one cares.
That's a good point. Maybe it's just for the benefit of England and Wales and you know, home nations. But just play bloody tests. Play tests is the pinnacle. A test match is the pinnacle of the game, and you don't need it in tournament format.
So I'm pretty much on board with that, but it's when they're not trying to pitch international rugby to us three, are they? Because we will be watching it, whatever happens. They're trying to pitch it to a wider audience. It's as simple as that, and they feel
creates a narrative.
Yeah,
you know, love every decision that rugby makes now. Right. And this is, I don't care what the thing is which they're doing. They always say it's to appeal to a wider audience. I do not know anyone who was not going to watch the test match between Fiji and another team and then thought, actually, it's in the form of a tournament. I'm going to watch Fiji versus... It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it does. It creates narratives that people understand.
Test matches create narratives. In 10 years' time, do you think that people will turn around and say, wasn't it amazing when Wales won the coronavirus shield? Coronavirus. Or whatever it's called. No, because it's never going to happen again. So, I wonder if that's part of it. I wonder if part of it is World Rugby want to build, basically, or plant the seed of a tournament which they own, which can compete with the Six Nations. Because
I think you're overthinking it. I really think you're overthinking it.
Maybe I am. Maybe they just want to play some games.
You just want something more to moan about, JB.
No, I'm... Yeah. Okay.
Right, I'll tell you what, I'll very, very quickly, I'll let you get that out of your system then. Exeter Chiefs made their decision on their branding and said they will retire Big Chief, their mascot, but will keep their logo.
No one cares. They have probably done the right thing. They've done it for the wrong reasons. You know, you can't bow to these online mobs. These people have got nothing better to do with their lives than protest about things. Person behind the Chiefs for Change thing, as from what I can tell, is nothing more than a career campaigner against something or another. Their statement, their victory statement, was ridiculous, which is Exeter Chiefs have now offended or now, you know, I can't remember what it was, but they've affected all minorities. I mean, that's clearly wrong and a stupid thing to say. And Exeter Chiefs are absolutely right to keep their overall branding. Now, I'd like a different brand because I don't think it's, you know, a very good badge, but they've done it. So that is their brand. And I tell you what, if I was to revisit one of my predictions, which turns out is 100% correct, it is this, which is these people never give up. They never give up, not because they care about anyone or they care about social justice. They care about anything. They care about compliance. This will never be enough. And then when they do change something else, that will never be enough. It's not about improving the lives of anyone. It's about a very small handful of individuals demanding compliance from a sport, because fundamentally these individuals involved are unimportant and they somehow want to be involved in the larger conversation. It's narcissism. It's about them. It's not about the sport. It's not about social justice. It's just about compliance. And well done, Exeter Chiefs, for broadly holding the line.
Go on, Phil, what was your thoughts when you saw the statement from Exeter Chiefs?
I kind of with what JV said initially, which is most people don't care about this. I don't think Exeter have done a bad thing in doing what they've done, albeit JV is probably right that the people campaigning will probably just continue because what they've done will never be perceived to be enough. So I don't mind Exeter changing I'd say not the name, but the logo and retiring Big Chief. You can take it or leave it on either of those. What the bit that I don't like is the campaign seemed to be based on a logic that Exeter Chiefs were doing legitimate harm. Their branding was doing legitimate harm. And that, I mean, not only do I think that is not actually accurate, so not correct, but also in a world where you've got tens of thousands of people dying from a virus and we are in the midst of what could be one of the worst recessions ever, there is actual legitimate harm going on in the world that any time and energy and money could have been much better spent dealing with. And so I just feel like this is, it's probably misguided effort because it's people who want to take offence and cause a scene rather than do some actual good.
I'd be okay if Exeter had changed their logo. I'm absolutely, yeah, absolutely okay that they haven't. I'm content with their decision to retire their mascot. I think the people that have brought up all this grievance are well-meaning, but here's something which I honestly believe is a majority view. Probably agree with what Phil and I just said, and I think that people who throw their grievances around and the label racist around casually on behalf of a group that they cast as helpless and need saving makes things far worse, not better. And to echo what Phil said about other things, if you really want to use rugby, I just like rugby because it's a bloody great sport and I like the clubhouse and a beer afterwards and I like meeting all the different people and all the rest of it. But if you really want to make rugby a means to leverage like social change or improve people's lives, then, you know, there's reports starting to come out about manufacturers, sporting goods manufacturers, naming no names at this point, who are using basically Chinese gulags full of Uyghur Muslims whose organs and hair is being harvested to make those sporting goods. Maybe you could use rugby to try and leverage a bit of social change by applying some pressure there. Or if you are worried about the Exeter Chiefs logo and the harm you claim it is actually physically doing in the United States, where have you been for 20 years when the Dubai Sevens has been in a country where you cannot be gay? And if you're found to be gay in that country, you get thrown off of a building. Where have you been for 20 years? Because there's loads of ways you can use rugby to change the lives of people who we can demonstrate are physically actually being harmed.
So listen to this. How cynical is this? I was talking to somebody who is very senior in a different sport, not rugby. And they have a social, I'm not going to tell you which cause it is, but they have a social justice tribute when their league reopens today. And when this initially was mentioned, someone said, yeah, I don't think we should do anything. Only to get overruled and say, actually, no, we need to do something. And it wasn't because we need to improve the situation of XYZ minority. It was because our messaging needs to be on brand for our sponsors and our TV partners. I mean, this is the world that we're living in now. There was no concern about the underlying issue. There was no concern about, you know, any suffering going on. It was literally a commercial decision. And, you know, and yet we put up with this and we think it's good. They're not thinking about their fans. They're not thinking about what it means to put politics into sport. They're not thinking about any of these actual, any of the actual things and problems that they are causing. They're just doing it because they want to be seen to be doing the right thing for sponsors. They don't even know what the sponsor wants. They're just saying, oh, we know our messaging needs to be on point. It's a joke.
Well, in terms of an evidence-based approach and an empirical numbers, which I do think is important in this, then I think just one quick word on a different but kind of related point. I just want to say well done to World Rugby for the way they are sensitively and principally handling the transgender issue in rugby, because they are pioneering. They're doing things which no other sport, not even the International Olympic Committee, have broached. And they're looking at maybe going beyond the scope of any other sport on earth. And I think they're doing it in a really, really diligent way and sensitive way and respectful way. But World Rugby are ultimately coming down on the side of the evidence on a very difficult transgender issue.
Yeah, so yeah. You're specifically referring to, I think it was last week, when World Rugby have announced that they have been doing investigations into transgender women playing women's rugby and the potential harm, even when they've, because currently and previously they have adopted the Olympic guidelines on reduced testosterone for a 12-month period, but the evidence is on the side that that does not have a large enough impact on the strength or performance of transgender women having reduced testosterone, who've gone through male puberty but have reduced testosterone for 12 months. Basically, it's not enough. And from what I read, it was a likelihood of 20-30% greater chance of women being harmed by trans women in that circumstance.
Yeah, and stronger by 25-50%. 30% more powerful, 40% heavier, 15% faster, and as you say, about 20-30% greater risk of injury, just purely by a tackle, by those individuals who have gone through male puberty.
Yes, and then become a trans woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it just seems an incredibly sensible approach. And some of the complaints around this have been on, one, trans women are women, which I'm fine with, absolutely fine with that statement. Let anyone do whatever they want, until the point where it significantly increases harm to any group, to the trans women or to other women. Mm-hmm. At that point, it just gets a bit ridiculous to continue carrying on saying that blunt statement.
Yeah. I'm torn on this. First of all, I don't think I needed a scientific study to prove this. I didn't need a scientific study to prove men are stronger than women with or without testosterone any more than I need a scientific study to tell me the effects of a rising tide on sandcastles. You know, I knew.
But quantifying it empirically is useful, and it's the like that phrase. Whoever came up with that phrase, I don't know. Facts don't care about your feelings. With such a sensitive topic, it draws the sting out, and it's just pure numbers, and you can't argue with facts.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of knew it. You know, I know how many moons are in the sky. I just know these things. But I will say this, where I am torn is I am incredibly sympathetic to individuals. They only want to play the game because they love the sport. And that's a bit which I feel really, really bad about. they're individuals who are struggling with their identity and they just want to play rugby. They're no different to you and I who want to play rugby, but their situation probably will not allow them to do so. And having some other solution for them, like only transgender rugby, that's never going to work. It's probably not enough.
Open categories.
Yeah, there's probably not going to be enough of them to play. And actually, by even saying it's transgender rugby, you're sort of denying their, you're denying them the fact that they are a woman, if that makes sense. A woman who should be a women's sport. So it's good that they've come to this conclusion, but I get no joy from it.
It's November at the World Rugby Council meeting where they're going to actually decide. It's still in a deliberation process, but what they had was stakeholders from all sides giving evidence to a panel, and I just, so ultimately we'll find out what the result was going to be. It appears like it's leaning towards being the very first sport to say that it's not safe to do so. But I just above everything, I just want to praise World Rugby for the process and the way they're handling a really, really difficult issue and pioneering this.
Well, I would just say, you said something interesting, like an open category, Tim. I would be open to it. Yeah, but I just, an open category just means men playing against transgender women, doesn't it?
It just be like, it means if someone felt really strongly that there is no, and some people believe there is no difference between the genders whatsoever, gender shouldn't even be a thing. It's all socially constructed, and an XY versus an XX chromosome, there's no difference. Some people might feel so strongly that they go, I'm gonna go and choose an open category. They can go and do it, but at least then it's people choosing to understand the risk.
Yeah. I think it's a reasonable thing to say. I think an open sport is a very interesting idea. Although I just don't think you'd get a single woman playing, and the women that did play, it would be good.
Yeah, it's a really difficult subject, because the whole ethos of rugby is inclusive, and that's something we all agree on. And this is what I would say on people with all of these topics, whether it's Exeter's logo, whatever, everything. Everybody on all sides, all stakeholders, want the same thing. Just we have different opinions on how to get there, and what the nuances and what the right decisions are. And so it doesn't help when, you know, as I said, when people call Exeter racist, doesn't help. When people might listen to this conversation and say transphobe because of some people will, and it doesn't help, and it's wrong.
And to be fair, mate, you've got so much on your plate already, being a moon landing denier, that you can't possibly have trans.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, that's the social justice portion of the podcast. Let's get back to some rugby.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Some rumours. We all like a rumour. The Premiership is 12 days away as we record this, maybe 11 days away as you listen to it. And it looks like, well, Rob Simmons, we mentioned last week, has been confirmed going to London Irish. They're going to finish fourth because they've got a second big money Australian lock.
Yeah, keep signing them.
Keep signing them, and they'll keep doubling up on their league position.
Yeah, so this signing, before we move on from that, this signing is not so much a gain for London Irish, but a huge loss for Australia. Because Australia have got no locks, from what I can tell.
They've got no money either. So I'd suggest that there's probably a balance of loss. They're probably thinking, well, that's a big one off the books. Good.
Presumably Rob Simmons falls into the Gitto law, the 60 cap territory. I'm just looking him up now.
The soon to be scrapped Gitto law, which soon it'll just be do whatever you want.
Yeah, 98 caps. So yes, he does. He'll be able to play for them regardless.
Yeah. Raylene Castle really left Australian sport in good nick, didn't she, when she left?
when she got pushed out.
the world's best sports administrator. She really, Australian rugby's in great shape.
Well, what I else? Did just on that. I watched the last 30 minutes of the Brumbies Reds game. I don't know if either of you seen any of this.
So a little bit of it.
Say last.
Can I just say I want to applaud the what's the number eight's got number eight Harry Wilson. I want to applaud how tight his shorts were. They were tiny.
He's a big, strong boy.
The big old legs, and he wanted people to see as much of those quads as possible. Yeah, it was like Sonny Bill Williams-esque shorts.
And I do love, so the two number eights in this game, both big, strong boys. Pete Samu, I love for his tucked-in shirt as well.
Yeah.
He tucked in up to the navel as well. It's like a really distinctive look.
So Michael Jordan, I'm sure I've got this wrong, but the basketball shorts used to be really, really short.
Yeah.
Until Michael Jordan showed up and had them a bit longer. And then
I reckon he's just a bad quad. He's just, rubbish quads.
Well, I wonder, like, who's going to do that? What is the next sporting trend that is going to occur? And maybe it's really high short lines.
Ooh, yeah. I can get on board with that.
Shorts.
So this game, so the Brumbies were 14-3 up going into the second half. And then the Reds scored 17 unanswered points in about 15 minutes to go 20 points to 14 up. And the whole of the last 30 minutes was both teams trying their hardest to make the worst possible decisions and execute them even worse to both lose this game. If both teams could have lost this game, that would have been the fair result. Because even within the last 2 minutes, both teams, just the number of turnovers, knock-ons, bad decisions. I mean, there's 50 seconds left on the clock. The Reds win a penalty just inside their own half. They kick for a line-out. They kick it into touch. And you think, right, they've got about 40 seconds to close this game out. They just win the line-out, a couple of phases, kick it out, and they lose the line-out. But then the Brumbies kick the ball away straight away. But then manage to get it back and 15 phases later, the Reds reserve flanker who secured a brilliant turnover 2 minutes earlier gives a penalty away for taking out the nine, trying to go for a turnover, and the Brumbies win, but only because of incompetence on both sides. Now, it was very entertaining to watch it, but it was someone actually tweeted us to say, like, watch this game because and compare it to the standard of Super Rugby Aotearoa. And I enjoyed both of them lots, but the standard, there is a marked difference between the standard of both the execution and the decision making.
Probably a metaphor for Australian rugby. Loads of endeavour and loads of enthusiasm, just really poorly executed. You could talk that about the administration of the game, the way they come up with the TV deals.
Yeah, badly thought through.
And
executed even worse.
Are you making an argument for umpires in rugby as well as referees now? So at the end of the game, so the ref's it, right at the end of the game, if both teams have been appalling, the umpire, I can step and say, you've both lost. Strike it off.
I would be happy in this game. I think that would be fair. No one wins.
Yeah, or like a league commissioner. I've always wanted a league commissioner for the Premiership, very much in the shape of Vince McMahon, or maybe but yeah, Vince McMahon would be perfect. Just as they're coming off, he's storming down the tunnel to his entrance music to declare, "You've both lost. All you got to do 30 minutes more." It's not acceptable.
What I will say is, it really meant something to the Brumbies. So this was them at home going 4-from-4 and doing it in difficult circumstances because they probably shouldn't have won. They didn't really deserve to, but they ground it out in the end and got the result. And it really meant something to the players, which that is really genuinely good to see.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So that was an Australian coming to the UK. It looks like London Irish might be following that up with Augustine Creevy.
Yeah, I mean, an expensive way. Well, a good way to empty your bank account. Augustine Creevy is one of those players that everybody raves about, but the finished product, I don't think, is often there from him. He was at Worcester for 2 years when they... Did he get relegated with them, or did he sign when they were relegated?
I think he played in the Championship with them.
Definitely played in the Championship. Everyone raved about him in the Jaguares for his offloads and whatnot, and I kind of don't really care if my hooker can offload. I care if he can throw in and scrimmage. A good way to waste your money. Hopefully he can come on and make an impact and contribute in some way. I just don't think I would do it.
I've always liked Creevy, and I think he's done very well in not great teams, which, I mean, you can only do as well as the people around you. How can you soar like an eagle when you're surrounded by turkeys?
Exactly.
But, he's 35 now, 36 early next year. It depends how much they're going to be paying him.
I'd suggest they're not paying premium money, and he's clearly a short-term solution. But I think that's basically London Irish have a short-term priorities at the moment while they let their academy come through. I think basically that's the balance. It's buy in some big names, get the academy working.
So Wasps had a situation, didn't they, a few years ago when all their hookers were injured, and they ended up picking up this little bloke from... Macclesfield. He used to play at Stockport.
I think he was at Rotherham at the time or something like that. Tom Cruise.
And look what happened there, eh? A solid Premiership contributor now. There's lads like Tom Cruise up and down the country. If you go and give them a chance, you know, you don't need to pay them big money, but you might have a hooker there for three, four years. And he's only got better since he was pulled out of the Championship.
I prefer that way of working. That's what I would do. I prefer that way of working, particularly given the fact that there's even more talk of a ring-fenced Premiership, or at least a several-year moratorium on relegation.
Yeah, let's go on to that. I will just say, in London Irish's credit, they have just signed two young lads. So they announced four signings last week. Rob Simmons, Tom Holmer being the headlines. And they announced... Charlton Kerr from England Sevens, who is an alternative route, and Matt Cornish from Ealing Trailfinders. So they're doing a bit of everything. Then it seems like their recruitment is not just fixated on ageing stars like Simon, Sean O'Brien and Creevy.
Yeah, big fan of Tom Holmer. Big fan. I don't think he's maybe fulfilled all the potential he had as a young lad when he had the golden boots and everything else. He doesn't even kick now, from what I understand. But good, solid signing. He's got roots to that club. I think he's the sort of player that they should be going after.
Just before we go on to the Championship, Befeli to Bath rumoured, and Benders, partly because of Tom Holmer. It was Leicester and... Oh, no, London Irish were one of the ones looking at him, but Benders is going to stay in France, it looks like, in Pro D.
Oh, that's... That's another interesting one, actually. Ibatoya.
Oh, yeah, to Agen.
That is a weird signing.
Anyone any inkling of what might have happened? Because I don't.
He's probably... So he's been talked about as potentially being near the England squad. Although
He was brought in to training squads by Eddie Jones.
Okay. And I assume he's got in his head that he wants England money. But Harlequins don't see him as an England money type player, but he can potentially get that in France.
And is this one of those things where, because I would have thought he would have been of interest to other Premiership clubs, but is this just him going for a certain amount of cash, or is this one of those things where the rumoured deal done in secret between Premiership clubs not to sign each other's players might be coming to fruition? I don't know.
I would assume he's not going to get, because he loses the academy credits going to another Premiership club, he's actually less attractive to another Premiership club than he is to Harlequins. So I assume, and I might be totally wrong in this, but I assume that simply the most money he can get is by going to France.
Now, I'm maybe putting two and two together and getting five here, but it does strike me that Paul Gustard does not in any way value wingers. Actually, he might say, look, the value I get from these guys, it's just not worth it. I can spend it on second rows. Yeah, I'm on board with that, I guess. But during his tenure, he's lost Charlie Walker, who was going great guns. Maitland retired. I think Molyneux...
Not Maitland. Maitland. Visser.
Sorry, Visser. Yeah, the other Scottish lad.
Nicky Gulliver.
Yeah. That's another one. And now, of course, Ibitoya. Now, go back to Rugby Dungeon. I think it's alluded to on there when I interviewed Charlie Walker, but he just looks for different things. And if you don't fit into that category of winger that he wants or winger that he's willing to pay for, you have to sling your hook. Now, that might be the case. It might not be. It might simply be the case that he didn't want to take his 25% pay cut and off he went, or he might want a new deal. But I guess, has he left because his deal has run out? Because this would be deal running out time in normal circumstances.
Yeah, maybe. My guess is a little bit, you're probably right, where Paul Gustard's philosophy is, you know, in a kind of, what was that film again with the baseball
Moneyball.
Yeah, in a Moneyball kind of fashion, he probably prioritise winger as a place where you can relatively save money. And he had that young lad come through, did brilliantly in your fancy rugby draft team, Phil, what's his name again?
Caden Murley and Ibitoya are great examples. You let go of Visser and Charlie Walker, who were both on big money deals, and bring in two 19, 20-year-olds who can do 95% of the job for 40% of the price.
Yeah, Marlon Yard was another player that they had.
Yeah.
That was in the Kingston, I think.
Not a Gustard removal. But
On Ibitoya, earlier on this season, he had more defenders beaten than any other player in any of the three top European leagues, Pro 14, Premiership and Top 14. So, you know, he's a serious talent.
Yeah. No doubt. I think it might be a Moneyball situation, and therefore either his expectation of cash wasn't one that Harlequins were willing to meet.
Yeah. If it is the case that Gustard has a philosophy and like a wage structure, and if you don't fit into that as a winger, or you don't do the things that he wants, and therefore he gets rid of you, I've got a lot of respect for that. I mean, it's not great for the player, but it's nice to know, if that was the case, that they are building a team in a certain fashion, in a certain way.
Mm. Yeah, I can get on board with that as well. We'll probably see down the line there'll be more of these kind of decisions made by Quinns potentially.
Yeah, and I wouldn't begrudge any player, you know, because some people might say, "Oh, I wish he's a young local lad. He should have taken his 25% pay cut and carried on and dug in." Everyone's, but I don't. Bearing in mind, one tackle can end a player's career. I don't begrudge any player if there's a great deal on the table and you want to take that cash.
Get your
crack
money.
Crack on.
Yeah, it's a certain, whatever it is, 300k a year compared to a speculative 25k a game for England.
England money isn't worth it. Unless you're Mario or Billy, England money isn't worth it because there's a good chance you're not getting it.
Yeah, yes.
On the championship then, how can you summarise what it's Ed Griffith, isn't it, on behalf of the championship clubs, talking about remodelling the second tier of English rugby as a heartland tournament with different principles, and it appears to be by learning some of the lessons of Premiership Rugby and the RFU and the difficulties they've found themselves in recent years.
Yeah, it's an interesting proposal. I mean, I can't help but think it's pie in the sky, but the proposal is, it would restructure the Premiership in a couple of ways. It would ring fence it for 4 years from 2021 through to 2025, potentially, with then a voting process or a panel process to get promotion or relegation. But it would also see all of the Premiership clubs relinquish their academies. So the 13 current academies would get restructured into 6 regional academies that would be centrally operated, and they would fund the 12 teams in the championship with players. The teams in the championship would have age and salary limits on those players. So you couldn't get someone like, who's the old Cornish prop, Paver, someone like that.
Yeah, Alan Paver, yeah.
Yeah, or Kettle, Gavin Kettle, was it?
Gavin Kettle,
who played for years, or these boys who are in their 30s and beyond have played a huge amount of championship rugby. You would totally restructure that league. So it is basically a feeder league to the Premiership. And each season, there would be a draft which the Premiership clubs could pick the best players in a sequential order. That's the proposal. I can't. There seems to be, in my mind, so many places where this is just going to fall down that I just cannot see you getting over the myriad of hurdles to make even half of it work.
I love the creative thinking behind it, and it's sort of if you could make it work, it would solve a lot of problems simultaneously. I think you're probably right. There are so many ways that it's going to be almost impossible to implement this and to police it that I just don't see it happening. But I really, really like that someone's taking a bit of a left field approach to trying to, rather than just tweaking little tiny things, trying to root and branch, how can we make this sustainable 20 years from now?
Very strange that Ed Griffiths is involved though, isn't it? Do you think?
He's a welcome connected man.
Ed Griffiths is Mr. Saracens, isn't he?
He is, and he was brought back. Obviously, he's not been for the last few years, but he was brought back to try and save their bacon.
Earlier this year. Does anyone remember why he left this time around?
So I listened to him. There was quite a good interview with Will Greenwood in January when he first came back, and he did briefly talk about it. And it's something to do with my inference was it was something to do with the first salary cap issue that got settled.
Exactly what I think. So yeah, he left because of the first salary cap. He came in for the second salary cap. I'm a little bit suspicious of Ed Griffiths been behind this with his previous links to Saracens. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Me too. But we'll take it on face value. I just can't see it working. I can't see you getting anywhere near that structure. But hey, I could be totally wrong.
Totally. Yeah, look at World Rugby with the way they wanted to revolutionise the international rugby season. And what ends up happening is you might get an extra weekend. We want to have a global season. Well, no, we're not going to do that. Just, it's like a massive tanker trying to change direction. It takes a long time because it's such a big, for a sport that is actually quite a small sport relative to others. It's so difficult to maneuver. So I don't see it working, but I really like that someone's thinking of it differently.
Yeah. Remains to be seen. I'm too sceptical of the individuals involved, I think.
So yeah, watch out for that one.
Sounds like you sound a bit like a conspiracy theorist there, JB.
I mean, if I was going to get somebody to do this, if I was going to get someone to do something which would benefit the championship, it probably would be someone like Nigel Ray or someone linked to Nigel Ray. I would just like a little bit more openness as to how this has come about. Because I think Nigel Ray is a phenomenal businessman, and one of those rugby people who, despite what he's done in the past, you can't deny. He's built a great thing at Saracens.
So Saracens are in a unique position that they've been on top of the English game, and they've fallen foul of the rules which the teams themselves have made up in marking their own homework, inserting their own loopholes and then taking advantage of them. So that in some ways, Ed Griffiths and Saracens have the most understanding of how this thing works. And there's a few things that Ed Griffiths has said, which I think you'd be totally on board with, JB. For example, he said that the administration of it needs to be completely taken out of the hands of the clubs, and it needs to be given to effectively like a commissioner or a...
By the way, exactly what Mark Evans says.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a structural problem.
There's that, and they've also said out of the 14 teams, I think they're proposing that they would make it a north and south thing to create less but more meaningful games.
Kind of like I've said.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. So a lot of what he's saying is totally in tune with where your head's been at.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, I would like a little bit more transparency as to how Ed Griffiths ended up here. Because it does sound like Saracens are lending their own man to structuring their own league.
Yeah, because they want to get a good TV deal. Because a good TV deal is part of it. Having games against touring teams is part of it. And that benefits Saracens.
Yeah.
But as Phil said, I don't think it will happen.
Just one other thing on marking your own homework. Did either of you see the announcement on the World Rugby Restructuring Review?
No.
So both candidates, Bill Bowman and Augustin Pichot, in running for World Rugby, both had in their manifesto a review of the governance structure of World Rugby, and Bill Bowman's has been announced. And on the panel for the supposedly independent review sits not only Bill Bowman, but also his running mate Bernard Laporte, and also Brett Gosper, and another half a dozen individuals who sit on the board of World Rugby. So they're doing what was supposed to be an independent review of the World Rugby governance structures, and something like 8 out of the 12 people on the panel of the review are directors or significant senior members of World Rugby.
So. I just don't understand. I don't understand it. First of all, why do we need another review? We can have reviews about reviews about reviews, another panel, another meeting, another conference room booked out continuously with the same people sitting on the same panels discussing the same stuff. Can we not just embrace what we have? Can we not just say, look, this is what we have? Now, imagine if everyone pulled together just to promote the things as they are currently. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. The game needs to change. I think it needs to change slowly, not some massive overhaul, you know, overnight based on one review. I'd be interested to see how many reviews we've had in the last decade and how many changes have happened due to these reviews.
So I think some of them are benefit, like some of the law variations that have happened over the last few years are probably for the better. But I totally understand your cynicism on this. And it's one definitely in this scenario where you've got people marking their own homework, people setting and then marking their own homework. It seems a bit ridiculous, and it's only going to achieve the objectives that they want it to achieve, not the objectives that would be best for the game.
It does remind me, though, don't forget this week we've got our review into Egg Chasers, the podcast. The people that will be present, me, the three of us.
Absolutely.
And we'll report back with our findings.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, it's got to be independent.
Item one will be moon landing. Did it really happen?
And then item number two, a round of Negronis.
Oh, correct.
Have we got Russia's doing a World Cup bid, I understand.
Yeah, 2027, Vladimir Putin is throwing his weight behind a potential Russian bid for the tournament, which has got loads of people on Twitter outraged, of course.
Of course. I would tend to agree with Twitter on this one, I think.
Yeah.
Russia, tremendous country, and we should have nothing to do with it.
Well, there is that, and I totally agree. Their human rights record, the issues that, you know, their treatment of homosexuals in the country makes me feel very uncomfortable. But then going back to something I mentioned earlier on the podcast, the Dubai Sevens happens every year.
Okay, let's get down to what really matters here. How much money are they willing to pay us? Because I'll make my morals.
Quite. Well, this is what my point was. If you want to take a moral position, then where are you with the kit manufacturers? Where are you with tournaments in the UAE versus, so I'm not saying I want a World Cup in Russia. I'm saying let's not pick and choose when we're offended and what we're offended by.
Not a wealthy country, is it? It has a handful of very wealthy individuals.
Oh, yeah, true.
Which slightly different.
It is very different.
I'd say let's see how much money they're willing to pay us first. And if it's substantial, let's do it. On the other hand, and I'm not just saying this for comic effect, there is no chance I'm going to a Russia World Cup. Not a hope. Not going.
I would also be a little bit concerned about going to a Russian World Cup.
There is no part of me that wants to visit the place. Certainly no part of me that wants to visit the place whilst I'm overtly Welsh or overtly English or overtly Western. No, I'm not interested at all in actually going to Russia.
And there is another issue with Russia in sport that you've not mentioned, but I was listening to Edwin Moses,
the former 400 hurdler.
Yeah, who is currently on the Olympic Committee for, I can't remember his exact title, but he's something like Director of Anti-Doping for the Olympic Committee. And he was specifically talking about, this was on The Economist this week, on Economist Radio, and he was talking about the myriad of basically state-sponsored doping programs they've had over an enormous period of time in lots of different sports.
If state-sponsored doping was successful, and it has been in Russia in the past, but if it's successful with the Russian national team and it get them to, I don't know, a semi-final, is that a price that you'd be worth, that you'd be willing to pay? Because it would mix up the, it'd mix up the order somewhat.
It would mix up the order. No. Wait, what's the, yeah, mixing up the order being the benefit and massive state-sponsored doping program for Russian rugby being the cost.
Well, look, I'm not the one funding it. So, you know, if one more competitive, I mean, I think for Russia to be competitive at rugby, they would need to not just work hard for 10 years, they'd need to work hard for generations.
Yeah.
To even be close to producing the athletes which England and South Africa have been producing. I'm just saying, you know, level the playing field a bit. I don't know.
The money is important. Money is important, absolutely. But if ultimately you really want to help nations which are emerging in rugby develop, there are lots of ways that you can help Georgia and you can help Fiji that haven't been done that should be done. So I would be really disappointed if things stayed exactly as they are for Georgia and Fiji and then there was a Russian World Cup, because you want to try and develop rugby in that area.
Yeah, and you know, the way that, you know, the way of the world at the moment, a Georgia/Russia World Cup might actually be a thing if Russia invades.
Oh, no, don't put them together, because Russia will think that means, like, literally, they'll just, yeah. If you're back in the nation now, we've moved the border.
Yeah, exactly. Send it somewhere else. So send it somewhere that I want to visit. That's all I ask.
Where would be top on your priority list?
I think Argentina for a couple of weeks would be pretty cool.
Ooh, yeah, Argentina.
The USA's got to happen, or a whole Canada, America, but USA's got to happen.
Yeah, Canada, USA, Italy would be a great World Cup venue.
Italy would be, yeah.
That really would.
We've got France 2023 to look forward to, haven't we?
Yeah, that's going to be fantastic.
Nip over every weekend.
Yeah.
You can do a full week's work and then get on it at the Rugby World Cup every weekend.
they've got plenty of stadiums. Although you'd have to have... Portugal would be great. Spain would be great.
Yeah,
a joint Spain-Portugal.
Yeah, that could get on board with that.
Well, you'd need to include both the national teams then, so I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah, you'd have two host spots then, so someone else would probably miss out.
But, you know, we, as a rugby community, we do owe an enormous apology to Spain.
Yeah.
Spain have been... It would be one small way towards rectifying the outrage of 2019.
Yeah, the injustice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good.
Any other business?
We all agreed, not Russia then.
Not Russia.
Yeah, I think on balance. Although, no. Yeah.
Should not Russia actually be not Spain?
Yeah.
A little bit of an in-joke there. so, yeah, I think we've got everything covered. Let's all go home.
I'll just say one thing, that I've just finished watching Dark on Netflix. Oh my God, that's awesome. I never thought I would watch a German show. It's a German sci-fi show. And you can either watch it dubbed, which is actually all right, or with subtitles. And it's so freaking good.
Mm. What is it about exactly?
Little German town. Kids start going missing. Uh-oh. And everyone and everything is connected in ways that you just don't imagine. And it's one of those, you can't watch it while you're just scrolling on your phone. You have to put your phone down and concentrate, because it's...
No good for me.
It's a labyrinth. It's bloody brilliant, though. Anyway.
Is it like a German Stranger Things?
A bit like that, but more a darker. Darker, older.
Cool.
But as a result, I need a tip, because I finished Succession, which is also awesome.
I've heard that's good.
It's really freaking good.
I might do that.
Something else now.
Might do that tonight, because I've not got a podcast to do now.
Succession. Wow. If you haven't watched that, watch Succession first. You would love that, JB. It's basically, I mean, it's imagine if there was a fly on the wall documentary about
Beard More and Co.
a big media billionaire mogul. Some people have pointed out Rupert Murdoch, for example, but I couldn't possibly say that because he's my boss ultimately.
Son, which is a shame, actually.
Sorry?
You're not his son, which is a shame.
That is a shame.
You could be. If you live in Japan, where we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but they have the highest rate of adult adoption in the world because they want to continue family-owned businesses in Japan. So often, really? people are groomed to be, so like 28 to 35-year-old, often men, but not always, are adopted by billionaire owners who own companies so that they can be the new CEO and they can succeed, and it's a succession plan. Yeah, but that happens in Japan, where you've got family-run companies that have lineages back hundreds of years.
Wow! So that's one way to go. If you're from a sort of a poor area of Japan and you have a child and you haven't really got two cents to rub together, then just hot house your child as a child prodigal CEO.
Yeah, grooming.
Yeah, but Tim, when you've seen the state of the salary men.
Just lost you there, JB. That's Putin. You've put yourself on. No, your camera's off. No.
How strange.
Come in, JB. Oh, well, there you go. I think Putin has taken him. He was about to reveal a very important bit of information. We'll have to leave that one. Phil, I'll say goodbye to you now, mate. Have a great Sunday night and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Cheers, buddy. Right.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.